From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
And I'm Annette John Hall. Shai, I have a question for you. Have you ever done blackface?
No, definitely not.
I had to ask. You know, everybody's doing it.
Right, everybody's doing it, of course.
Virginia has been rocked by political scandal involving an old yearbook photo and blackface. Both the state's governor and attorney general have admitted to wearing blackface decades ago. Florida's secretary of state recently resigned for posing as an African-American Katrina victim. And this week, the fashion house Gucci pulled a sweater that looked like blackface.
So when did you know that it was wrong?
I don't think anybody ever taught me that it was wrong. I remember that it felt wrong when I saw it. And, you know, what I thought of, I guess, when I was a kid, when I thought of blackface was the older depictions of blackface where it's very dark makeup with, like, maybe red face paint around the mouth. These things from maybe, I feel like, the early 20th century. And then later, all these other forms of blackface, just anybody kind of darkening their skin to look like a person of color, you know, I realized that's also blackface.
Well, you know, it's certainly been embedded throughout our culture and throughout history, for that matter. From minstrels to the mummers to college frat parties, blackface, which is the practice of whites blackening their skin to basically objectify African Americans, has been around since the 19th century. The recent controversy involving Virginia Governor Ralph Northam and a spate of other politicians who have worn blackface in their past have forced us to examine why this age-old mockery of African Americans persists, even among the people we elect to serve all of us.
So why does it persist? Today's show, Washing Off Blackface.
We pose these questions to W. Fitzhugh Brundage. He's a professor of history at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and editor of the book Beyond Blackface: African Americans and the Creation of American Popular Culture.
Its very earliest origins are a little murky, but it's clear that by the end of the 18-teens, and certainly by the early 1820s, in working class bars in New York City, there were men who were performing in blackface and performing music that they thought appropriated or somehow mimicked African-American music. The combination of whites in blackface singing songs about themes that they thought were relevant to African-American life created the kind of image that somehow this was a representation of African-Americans and African-American life.
These were mostly white men emulating black men?
Yes, the tradition, the conventions of the tradition, and the body of the tradition was created by white men mimicking African American men.
And why is that?
Well, that's the $64,000 question. One obvious answer is that it was an expression of contempt for African Americans by whites. And so we can take that for a given, that that's part of the equation. Another possible explanation is that, especially for working-class white men, degrading African Americans was one way of elevating themselves and asserting the privileges of whiteness, that is, to create as much distance as possible between themselves and African Americans, when in actual quality of life, an Irish-American immigrant in New York City may have been living as ragged a life as a free African American living in New York City. So it was part of the claim of white privilege, for sure. But I think there's also a powerful, very powerful thread of envy. And this has to do with associations that emerged in 19th century America between African American culture and traits that white Americans thought were attractive about African American culture.
Hmm.
And some of these attractive qualities are rooted in cliches about African Americans that were often sometimes derogatory, but not always. So, for example, the notion that African Americans are acutely musical, or African Americans are gifted dancers, or African American men are strong and virile. They're hypermasculine. Simultaneously, whites could see African Americans as being lesser people if they acknowledge them actually as, you know, fellow human beings. They could see them as lesser even while they might possess, that is, African Americans might possess some qualities that whites wish they possessed. So those two things can go hand in hand. And I'll just use the classic example of the jazz singer.
Mammy, Mammy, the sunshine's east, the sunshine's west, but I know where the sunshine's best.
Which is the 1927 film that Al Jolson performs as a Jewish, the son of an immigrant, Jewish American singer who sings blackface in the movie, and it is through singing blackface that he demonstrates his Americanness and wins over, so to speak, the respect of his father, who would have preferred that he be a Jewish cantor. But by singing blackface, Al Jolson demonstrates that he, even though he has these Jewish immigrant roots, is fully rooted in the American tradition of whiteness, because he sings in blackface.
I'd walk a million miles for one of your smiles on my Mammy.
So, Fitz, you know, Philadelphia has had a long history of blackface minstrel shows. I guess the biggest example of this would be the Mummers. Have you ever heard of the Mummers, Fitz?
I have heard of the Mummers, but I claim no expertise.
All right. Well, their origins are out of South Philadelphia. South Philadelphia, I guess, Italian.
I would say Irish and Italian.
Italian families. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They gather together. They form in different kinds of musical bands. And every New Year's, they have a parade. You know, their string band division for many, many years was often a version of a minstrel show until the city banned blackface more than 50 years ago, around 1964. And there was this...
Although there have been a bunch of incidents since then.
Bunch of incidents since then. But back then, there was this huge uproar. And, I mean, violence was threatened. These people wanted their blackface. And I guess my question is, in terms of the blackface tradition for entertainment, is that a convenient explanation for white people to say, this is just a form of entertainment? We don't intend to offend, even though black people have said it's offensive.
I think you're right about the ways in which, because blackface is so deeply rooted in American popular culture, particularly in the 19th century and early 20th century, that many whites can take it for granted as simply a part of the fabric of American culture. For example, as you mentioned, the string band tradition, which was a very rich musical tradition throughout the 19th century into the 20th century, is filled with minstrel songs, including the minstrel songs that Stephen Foster, the greatest songwriter of the 19th century, wrote for Christy minstrels and other minstrel performers.
The time is never dreary if the folks' day never grows. The ladies never weary with the rattle of the bones.
So if you're going to play string band music and you have a string band, there's a pretty high likelihood that you're going to end up playing some songs that had their origins in minstrelsy. It's almost unavoidable. So I think in the case of Philadelphia in particular, the intertwined history of blackface and the existence of an African-American community makes that history probably particularly brittle, if you will.
You know, Fitz, some of the incidents we're talking about, like Al Jolson and the Mummers, we're talking about like this cartoonish makeup that mocks African Americans. But there are also a lot of examples of people just simply darkening their skin to portray a black person. And people sometimes seem more ready to defend that, notably former NBC host Megyn Kelly.
As you may have heard, NBC Today host Megyn Kelly's show was canceled this past week following her on-air remarks expressing acceptance of blackface.
So there was a controversy on The Real Housewives of New York with Luann as she dresses Diana Ross, and she made her skin look darker than it really is, and people said that that was racist. And I don't know, I felt like, who doesn't love Diana Ross? She wants to look like Diana Ross for one day. I don't know how.
Was
like
that always seen as blackface? Is it seen as blackface?
I think you're probably right that during the 20th century, whites have, by no means all whites, but more often than not, whites have refrained from some of the extreme exaggeration that they engaged in the 19th century, and instead have just blackened their faces. And that has been, it's as though that's all they need to do to implicitly invoke that whole tradition. You don't need now to have the exaggerated features to nevertheless invoke that tradition.
So Fitz, I don't know if our listeners know this or can tell, but you're white. And so we get to get the inside track. I mean, me as an African-American person, I get to get the inside track for once about what whites are saying about this. Do you talk to friends about this? Do friends talk to you about this? And is there a level of just ignorance or dismissiveness that maybe your friends have that, you know, I don't do it, it's not part of my life, so let's not even have this conversation kind of thing? Or
again, these are all the things that one learns about being white in America that I don't ever think about it. I don't usually get asked to speak the way I'm sure you do routinely, be asked to somehow translate what African Americans are thinking for a white audience. That's not something that usually happens to me, experience for me.
Well, you know, and I think that we should have these conversations. I think that there is a level of fear that people have when we dive into these conversations about race, because they tend to get really messy. People just try to avoid them. But I think to the extent that we can have these conversations more, it becomes a learning experience for everybody involved. So I'm just glad you were game.
Well, yeah. And that's why it's good to have a conversation about blackface, because it puts the onus of the creation of the tradition, the onus of what the tradition means, on whites. Whites may still be defensive about it, but there's really no way for a white to avoid having to address the issue. You can't pawn this off on anybody else. This is what white people have been doing.
Fitz, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Fitz.
Sure, my pleasure. I enjoyed it.
And that's it for the show. The Why is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, and Alex Stern, with editorial direction from Katie Colinari.
We had help from interns Xavier Lopez and Julian Harris. Our engineers are Mike Villers, Al Banks, Diana Martinez, and Adam Staniszewski.
Our news director is Eugene Son. John Musoni is Assistant Vice President of News Operations, and Sandra Clark is Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue.
Ish Quintero composed our theme music. Subscribe to the podcast and don't forget to leave a review.
And don't hesitate to reach out on Twitter. We're at AnnetteJH, at Shai Ben-Yaakov, and at Alex Ray Stern.
We'll be back Monday.